Good afternoon, everyone. So today we will start our sutta class. This is sutras number 4 by a bear of sutras. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today we are reading this Bhayabhairava Sutta's Fear and Dread. So one of the reasons why I choose these suttas, because I read these suttas many years ago. And this is really, you know, sometimes the Buddha's teaching, you can really apply it into your practice. And I find that this is very useful. And especially when you have, you know, in the situation that lots of fear and have the dread. And because after I read these suttas, and I apply this in my practice, when I have that, you know, feeling arises, and then I actually, it's really work. The Buddha's teaching, whether in the Buddha's teaching. There's, I personally, like, I usually, I prefer to read suttas when I'm peaceful, when I'm calm. Sometimes when I'm peaceful, because you have more clarity. So when you have more clarity, when you read the suttas, you can understand in a deeper meaning and really understand, like, whether we are really in line with the teaching, whether we are practicing the Buddha's teaching, whether we are on the path. Because sometimes, like, you know, like, sometimes I've seen people, like, you know, like, reading suttas like very academic, and they're arguing what's the best translation, this and that. It's just like people, you know, you're arguing about the menu, you know. Like sometimes, like when I was a layperson, when I go like restaurants, sometimes with the name, you know, it sounds very tasty, you know, but you haven't tasted it, you know. Then it's just like you keep arguing, you know, talking about what names, whether this is a better name, you know, whether this is a amazing fried chicken sound better or a wonderful fried chicken, you know. It's all words, you know. They say it's very important that we really practicing, we really put into practice, and we have our first-hand experience. Actually, we are experiencing that what the Buddha is talking about is not words, because words itself is still a concept. You know, we are not really directly experiencing what actually the Buddha said. You know, we have to taste it ourselves, isn't it? If you haven't tasted a mango, I keep telling you how a mango tastes like. You can only imagine, isn't it? Until one day you taste it, you say, ah, this is what the Buddha said, isn't it? So they say, I find that if you're reading sutta, it's not only that to become so knowledgeable, but we can really apply the teaching in our the daily life, and also the practice, in our practice, and also know whether we are in line with the Dhamma, whether we are in line with the Buddha's teaching. So we'll start reading. So anyone want to stop me and ask any questions, please do so. So this is Bhayabhairava Sutta's Fear and Dread. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savati at Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's Park. Then the Brahmins Janusoni went to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When the courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said, Master Gotama, when clansmen have gone forth from home life into homelessness out of faith in Master Gotama, do they have Master Gotama for the leader, the helper, and the guide? And do these people follow the example of Master Gotama? That is so, Brahmin, that is so. When the clansmen have gone forth from the home, life into homelessness, out of faith in me, they have me for the leaders, the helper, and the guides. And these people follow my example. But Master Gautama removes jungle, thicker resting places in the forest are hard to endure. Seclusion is hard to practice, and it's hard to enjoy solitude. One would think the jungle must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. That means his mind is not still. That is so, Brahmin, that is so. Remove jungle, thicker resting places in the forest are hard to endure. Seclusion is hard to practice, and it's hard to enjoy solitude. One would think that jungle must rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. This is referred to samadhi, like when someone really have that deep stillness, then your mind is really still. You know, it's not just like a concentration, we'll be able to concentrate. It's much more referred to that samadhi, the really deep and peaceful mind. When you have that deep and peaceful mind, then that is like in a samadhi state, in the jhana state, is deep. It's not just concentrate mind. So, that is so, Brahmin, that is so. Remove jungle, thickest resting places in the forest are hard to endure. Seclusion is hard to practice, and it's hard to enjoy solitude. One would think the jungles would rob a bhikkhu of his mind if he has no concentration. Before my enlightenment, so now he talked about his enlightenment. While I was still only an enlightened bodhisattva, I do consider this. Remove jungle, thicker resting places in the forest are hard to endure. The jungles must rob, the jungles must rob a bhikkhu of his mind, and if he has no concentration, if he has no samadhi. So I prefer to put the words that's no samadhi. So I consider this. You can see, like, when the Buddha talked about, like, here he said that when he was still a bodhisattva, that's why he experienced that fear. So when you enlighten, you have no fear. You know. But because of here, he's talked about, he was still an enlightened bodhisattva, that's why he experienced this fear and dread. So I consider this. Whenever recluses or Brahmins, I'm purified in bodily conduct, resort to remove jungle, thicker resting places in the forest. Then owing to the defect of the unpurified bodily conduct, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remote jungle thicket resting places in the forest. I'm purified in bodily conduct. I am purified in bodily conduct. I resort to remove jungle thicker resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with bodily conduct purified. Seeing in myself this purity of bodily conduct, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. So, as you can see, actually this can really apply in our practice. I remember that many years ago when I was in Thailand, that time I was alone in the area. And actually, of course, sometimes, you know, because actually the kuti that I say is actually just next to the, actually is the wall for putting ashes. And actually it's an old cemetery. So of course, sometimes when you're alone, that fear comes out. You really, sometimes certainly when you're alone sitting there, certainly the fear comes out. And actually I do contemplate and reflect on that, and reflect on my precept. So I'm asking myself, I'm here, I'm keeping the precepts, I'm keeping eight precepts, I'm keeping, you know, I'm not harming human beings, living beings, you know, I just reflect on my precept. one by one, and I reflect on that. So I said, yeah, I'm not practicing non-harming. I have no intention to harm anyone. I'm just here to practice. I'm just here to, you know. So why would anyone want to harm me? You know, then actually that moment, my fear just subsides. You know, subdued, like, you know, because I feel like, yeah, why I have all this fear? Why I'm so scared? Certainly, I feel really scared, like, you know, by myself, you know, and it's just that moment that fear just aroused, you know, and then I reflect on that. That's why, as you can see, this Buddha's teaching, actually, you can, you know, apply that, you know, into your practice. You can really use it, and really, it's really work. And I can speak on from my own experience. It's really work when I reflect on my sila, on my, you know, yes, I have no intention to hurt anyone. Who else come and harm me, you know? Then actually that subsides, because especially, you know, in those the places like that, you know, sometimes I hear people coming tell me to see all this and that, but honestly speaking, I haven't seen anything. So, but some people, They live there for one night, and then the next morning they want to leave. They said they saw all these spirits or all these things. But I've been there. I haven't, 1 year I haven't seen anything, you know. Like, for example, like sometimes at night, it's raining, and then you need to go to the toilet. It's really raining, you know, heavily. You have to take umbrella out and go to the bathroom, you know, the toilet, and the toilets have no light, you know. And you, what happened? I using the torch, and I opened the toilet, and I saw someone in front of me, actually myself, because there is a mirror, and I really, it really scared me. I was, you know, who's that? You know, oh, it's myself, you know, because it's really dark, completely, you know. Sometimes you do, you know, we do have fear, you know. That the fears arise, you know, and then because of that, you, when you're peaceful, you're calm. But only when you're peaceful and calm, you be able to really reflect and contemplate. You know, yes, I have no intention. You know, I'm really, you know, keeping my precept. I'm really a virtuous person. You know. And my conduct is good, you know. So then when you reflect on that, you have the confidence. And actually it really does work. And is the suttas is not for us to just to be so knowledgeable, you know. It's not for us to go and argue that how much we know, but actually we really be able to really understand, you know, and really can reflect on that, and can only We also can see that whether we are really practicing, whether we are practicing the Buddha's teaching, whether we are in line with the Dhamma. So then now come to the fifth to seven. I consider thus, whenever recluses of Brahmins, unpurified in verbal conduct, unpurified in mental conduct, unpurified in livelihood, resorts to remote jungle thickets, resting places in the forest, that evoke unwholesome fear and dread, but I am purified in livelihood. I resort to remote jungle thickets, resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones with livelihood, purified. Seeing in myself this purity of livelihood, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. So this is again like, you know, repeating. So then he started to reflect. That's why it continued to reflect, you know. So whenever recluses of Brahmin who are covetous and full of lust and uncovetous, then again, you know, because that this is again like, you know, I'm not someone that is greedy, I'm not someone with lust, you know, I'm someone that is purified. So this is again like is a more refined level of his reflecting on this, like with a mind of ill will and intention of hate, I have a mind of loving kindness, you know. So overcome by sloth and torpor, I without sloth and torpor, and overcome restless and unpeaceful in mind, I have a peaceful mind. Uncertain and doubting, I have gone beyond doubt. So, and actually these first five is the five entrances. That is desires, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt. And this is the five hindrances. So they say he's because the Buddha's when you are enlightened. So he's already permanently, abandoned these five hindrances. So that's why he reflect on that, he's no more, he don't have this, he's already abandoned the five hindrances. And given to self-praise and disparagement of others, I'm not given to self-praise and disparagement of others. So I'm subject to alarm and terror. I'm free of trepidation. So desires of gain, honor, renounce, I have few wishes. So lazy and wanting in energy, I'm energetic. I'm mindful and not fully aware, I'm established in mindfulness. So he's been reflecting on all the good qualities. You see, all that, that's why it's important, like the Buddha always mentioned that when we, that's why we do something good, and something wholesome. Sometimes when we reflect on the wholesome qualities, actually give rise to that confidence and the faith in ourselves. That's why, because when unwholesome qualities, when we suck into unwholesome qualities, actually it leads us to a loss of like worries, fear. But if we focus on the wholesome qualities, actually it gives rise to peace, calm and happiness and a lot of joy. So he said, unconcentrated and with straying minds, I'm possessed of concentration. That means he said, I'm possessed of samadhi. And 19, I consider this whenever recluses or Brahmins, devoid of wisdom, travelers resort to remote jungle thickest resting places in the forest, then owing to the defect of their being devoid of wisdom and travelers, these good recluses and Brahmins evoke unwholesome fear and dread. But I do not resort to remove jungle thicker resting places in the forest, devoid of wisdom, travelers, and I'm possessed of wisdom. I resort to remote jungle thicker resting places in the forest as one of the noble ones possessors of wisdom. Seeing in myself of this possession of wisdom, I found great solace in dwelling in the forest. I consider this the especially auspicious night of the 14th, the 15th and the 8th of the fourth night. Now, what if on such nights as this, I were to dwell in such inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrine, woodland shrines, and tree shrines. Perhaps I might encounter that fear and dread. And later, on such special auspicious nights as 14, the 15, and the 18, and of the fortnight, I dwelt in such odd, inspiring, horrifying abodes as orchard shrines, woodland shrines, and the tree shrines. And while I dwelt there, a wild animal would come up to me, or a peacock would knock off a branch, or the wind would rustle the leaves. I thought, what now if this is the fear and dread coming? I thought, why do I dwell always expecting fear and dread? What if I subdue that fear and dread while keeping the same posture that I'm in when it comes upon me? So, and especially this part, I'd like to share with you that actually I do experience this when I stay in a cave, and the first night I was honestly speaking, I was terrified. I was really terrified. I was so scared because, you know, when you're terrified, you hear all sorts of sound, you know, you will interpret in the way that, you know, and I hear someone walking towards me and go close to me, and I feel that someone is standing and looking at me, and I was really terrified. I really don't dare to turn around, and that moment I was terrified. I said, what am I going to do? Then certainly, because I remember this sutta, I read this sutta before, and I remember the Buddha said, you remain the same posture, you know, don't move. So I said, okay, yes, I don't move. They said sometimes it's good when you have the clarity, when your mind is peaceful, when you read suttas, you can remember. You know, you can remember and you can read. You know, when at times it just automatically pop up in my mind that, oh, yeah, I remember this is what the Buddha said. So I remain that posture. So I just holding like that, I sit like that. So then I just so scared. I use the blanket to cover my face. So I'm holding, I cover like that. Actually, I was really, my fear actually is coming, rising up to almost like really the max, you know. I was very, very fearful. Very fearful. I was holding like that. I don't dare to even move, you know, because the Buddha said, remove that that posture. If you are walking, you continue walking. You're standing, you just stand there. If you sit, you just sit there, don't move. So I just remain that posture. Don't even dare to move, you know. Then I was really with that fear. And the fear gone up to really, really the max. I just be with the fear. And until the fear comes to the maximum point, actually it subsides. It's just like anything, it won't stay there forever, you know, that come up to the maximum point, it, you know, the whole, you know, the fear just subsides. And the moment that it subsides, that my whole body, you know, I was really relieved and so peaceful, very peaceful, incredibly peaceful and calm. Because that the fear gone, because the fear, I overcome that fear, that I overcame that fear. And I started to listen, what is this sound all about, you know? Actually, in fact, I hear someone walking towards me, actually it's the rustles of the leaves, you know? But I interpret that as someone walking towards me. Then I listen to, hey, actually it's leaves, you know? And I look, that I dare to turn around and have a look. That time, when the fear gone, I turn around, I stand up, I walk around and have a look. And that time I was, because the fact that I was so terrified, because not only I hear someone walking towards me, and I hear someone making noise, like I had someone making noise like, but actually, that is not someone making that noise, actually because of the fear, you know, like what the Buddha said, you're expecting that, you know, when you're in fear, when you're really so fearful, so you hear things like, you know, you expecting all this happen. Then actually it's the, because in the cave that sometimes they have all this water dripping, you know, so we use the bucket to collect the water. So some bucket, when it's it depends if it's empty, when the water drip, it sounds different. And some, when it's full, it's also different sound. So it sounds like, when the water drip into the bucket, it sounds like, doom, you know? Actually, it's the dripping of the water. But amazing that I hear that, you know? This is how you want to see what you want to see, what to hear what you want to hear. Because that time you really, you know, you think that there is something there, there is something, isn't it? This is how tricky the mind, you know? So, yeah, then I slowly, I said, nothing. Actually, it's just, this water dripping, just the rustling of the sound, the leaves, you know. Then I realized that, you know, actually it's my own, because of my fear, you know. Then you start to, you know, sometimes when we are very fearful, we started to project lots of things. Might be this, might be that, you know. And we started to be so worried, isn't it? And then after that, you know, and then when we suck in, then next time when we have fear, we become fear of the fear, isn't it? Become more fearful. And that's why I'm so grateful that, you know, the fact that because of this teaching that I benefit when I'm in that situation, I'd be able to remember what the Buddha said, remember the suttas, I'd be able to really apply that in that when I encounter that, you know. So I find it is really so useful, you know. So we continue. So while I walk, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither stood, nor sat, nor lay down till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I stood, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor sat, nor lay down, nor till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I sat, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor stood, nor lay down, till I had subdued that fear and dread. While I lay down, the fear and dread came upon me. I neither walked, nor stood, nor sat down, till I had subdued that fear. And this is me that time when I was laying down. Just lay down. And there are Brahmins, some recluses and Brahmins who perceive day when it is night. And night is it. When it is night, and night when it is day, I said that on the path, this is an abiding in delusion, but I perceive day when it is day, night when it is night, day when it is day. Rightly speaking, what to be said of anyone, a being not subject to delusions has appeared in the world for the welfare happiness of many out of compassion, for the world, for the good welfare, happiness of gods and human is of me indeed, that rightly speaking, this should be said. And this is what he said, that like he's already abandoned, already abandoned the delusion. That is, that's why he said, because when as long as we are not enlightened, when we are binded by our ignorance, we don't perceive things as they really are. So we always perceive things, you know, we perceive suffering as happiness, you know, happiness as suffering, you know, we don't perceive things purely because our mind is not, we don't have the wisdom. So we are blinded by our ignorance, we're blinded by our craving. So we don't see things as they really are. But because this is what it means, that the Buddha, he's already enlightened. So that's right. He's not blinded by the delusion because he's perceived things as they really are. But for us, like, we don't perceive things as they really are. We don't perceive things purely because we usually perceive things, you know, what we perceive is always, you know, perverted by our likes and dislikes, you know. Whatever things that we like, we immediately, you know, we get sucked in, isn't it? And immediately greed arises, isn't it? So whenever we the things that we don't like, immediately ill will, hatred comes up. We don't like this, you know. But the Buddha just remained that he can, because when we get sucked in, we don't see. So we perceive things, you know, according to what we like and what we don't like, isn't it? But the things that we like, we can see. The things that we don't like, we tend to pretend that it's not there, you know. So that's like, when once already abandoned the delusion, that's really, have the wisdom. So that's why he has the clarity. So he just perceiving things as they really are. He just perceives things purely, not perverted by great hatred and delusion. But someone is not enlightened. When we perceive things, we always, you know, perverted by our great, it's always been, you know, perverted by our defilement. So we don't see things as they really are. We don't perceive things purely. So now come to the 20, 22. Tireless energy was aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness was established. My body was tranquil and untroubled. My mind concentrated and unified. Quiet, secluded from sensual pleasure, secluded from unwholesome state, I enter a point and abide in the first jhana, which accompanied by applied and sustained thought with rapture and pleasure born of seclusion. So this is how when the five hindrances being abandoned, so then that is the five hindrances, that is the desires, evil, sloth and torpor, and restlessness, and doubt. This is the five hindrances. So when that abandoned, so it's replaced by the five jhana factors. The five jhana factors is the applied thoughts, sustained thoughts, the applied and sustained thought. That means applied thought. That means you'll be able to bring the mind together, you'll be able to onto the object, you'll be able to you'll be able to really bring your mind onto the object. So, and sustain thought, like you'll be able to keep the mind onto the object, like you'll be able to sustain. So you'll be able to stay with the object. And then the third jhana factors, that is rapture, and then there is a pity, they call it pity, and happiness or joy, that is sukha, and also ekagada. Ekagada is a unifying with the object. That means it's one pointedness. Your mind completely be able to stay with that that object. So that is the first jhana, that is still with the five jhana factor. So he said, with the stilling of applied and sustained thought, I enter a point and abide in the second jhana, which has self-confidence and singleness of mind without applied and sustained thought, with rapture and pleasure born of concentration. That means this is how, when the first jhana, when you still have the applied thoughts and sustained thought, that means your mind is still a bit it's not completely still, because you still have to bring your mind and keep your mind, you know, sustained onto the object. So it's not still. So that's why when you let go of that, then you just have the rapture, that is the rapture, that is the pity and the sukha, and the one-pointedness. So as you can see, as your mind from the first jhana, second jhana, you can see that is you have to keep letting go. So because the first jhana, the mind is still not that steady. So you have to, when you let go more and more, even we experience the pity sukha, that is still happiness, and the rapture actually is excitement. So when we have excitement, the mind is still a little bit, you know, it's still not completely still. It's the very, very, very subtle, that movement is still there, even with the excitement. So that's why, as you can see, as the mind goes, you know, deeper and deeper from first jhana, second jhana, as you can see, the mind become more and more still. So that's why the first two jhana factors, you know, that is, you still have to keep the mind and sustain the mind, so the mind is still not completely still. So then there is a second jhana. Then you come to the third jhana, and third jhana, they have to let go of that rapture and pity sukha, because even with the joy, with that rapture, you still have, the mind is still a little bit not completely still. It's still a bit moving. It's just, you know. So with the fading away as well of rapture, I abide in equanimity and mindfulness, and fully aware, still feeling pleasure with the body, I enter a point and abide in the third jhana. An account of which noble ones announced, he has a pleasant abiding who has equanimity and is mindful. So with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, I enter a point abide in the fourth jhana. So the third jhana, you let go of that rapture, and then you come to the third jhana, you let go of the sukha, and come to the fourth jhana, you completely let go of that. Then you remain only that the equanimity, and its mind. So you become equanimous, the mind completely still, not any movement at all. It's just still. So with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, and at that point, by fourth jhana, I've already done this. Now it's the 27. When my concentrated mind, when my still mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, beauty, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of recollections of past life. I recollected my manifold past life. That is one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world contraction, many eons of world expansion, many eons of world contraction and expansion. There I was so named of such a clan, with such a appearance, such was my nutriment, such of my experience of my pleasure and pain, such of my lifetime, and passing away from there, I reappear elsewhere, and there too I was so named of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my nutriment, such was my experience of pleasure and pain, and such my lifetime, and passing away from there, I reappear there, thus with this, with the aspect and particulars, I recollect my manifold past lives. And this is how, when after the fourth jhana, then the first that he be able to, the first knowledge that he's attained, that is, he be able to recollect his previous life. So many lifetimes, you can see that he been born, and then he been again and again, keep on, reborn in one birth, and many birth, many eons, birth, that he be able to recollect his past life. This is the first knowledge, the first true knowledge to attain. So this was attained by me, banished, and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished, and lights arose, as happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. When my mind was still purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, beauty, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of passing away and reappearance of being. With the divine eyes, which purify and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away with reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate. I understood how beings pass on according to their action. So he now, the second knowledge that is attained, that is the karma, that he can see the karma, how people, because of the action, how they reborn in that place, because according to their action, according to the karma. So that one, the second one is the Buddha's, that with the knowledge that he understood the karma. So I understood how beings pass on according to their action test. These worthy beings who were ill conducted in body, speech, and mind, revealers of noble ones, wrong in their views, giving effect to wrong views in their action, on the dissolution of the body after death, has reappeared in a state of deprivation, in a bad destination, in perdition, even in hell. But these worthy beings who were well conducted in body, speech, and mind, not revealers and of noble ones, right in their views, giving effect, do right will in their actions. On the dissolution of the body after death, they have reappeared in a good destination, even in the heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I saw beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and I understood how beings pass on according to their action. That is the Buddha's understand the karma. So, this was the second true knowledge attained by me in the middle watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose, as happened in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. When my still mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfection, malleable, beauty, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to knowledge of the destruction of the taints. So this, I directly knew as it actually is. This is the suffering. I directly knew as this is actually is. This is the origin of suffering. I directly knew as this actually is. This is the cessation of suffering. I directly knew as this actually is. This is the way leading to cessation of suffering. I directly knew as it actually is. These are things I directly knew as it actually is. This is the origin of the things I directly knew as it actually is. This is the cessation of the things I directly knew as it actually is. This is the way leading to the cessation of the things. So, because the third knowledge that is, he be able to penetrate through or understand the fourth noble truth. This fourth noble truth that is the suffering, the source of the origin of suffering, the cause of the suffering, the way leading out of suffering, and then the cessation of the suffering. Then he be able to directly the Buddha sought for the third a true knowledge actually that is the destruction of the taints. I think the last suttas I mentioned about the taints, the three asavas, that is the destruction of the karma asavas and the bhava asavas and the avijja asavas, because the craving itself keep coming back. The cause of we being trapped in the samsara, in the cycle of rebirth, because of the craving. These three taints the Buddha mentioned about, that is the karma asava. Karma asava is the sensual pleasure, the desires, the sensual desires. And the bhava asava is the craving, the desires of being exist, the existent. That's like craving to be, we want to be exist. That keep us, you know, keep coming back, because we crave, we want to come back, you know, we don't want to disappear, you know, that keep us in trapped in this samsara. And also the reason why we holding on to this, we want to come back because of avijja asava, because of our a delusion. So I prefer to use the word delusion, because delusion is just like we don't perceive things as they really are, and we misinterpret our experience, you know, because it's not that we're stupid, you know, it's just that we deluded because of we misinterpret our experience. So we see things, we perceive things, you know, happiness as suffering as a happiness, you know, and we perceive things impermanent as permanent, you know, and this is how, because of the delusion. That's why we have this craving, because of this, the attachment, you know, to all this like craving, you know, all the sensual desires, and we want to be exist, you know, the craving to be. So that is actually when the Buddha talk about this three knowledge, is always the rebirth, karma, And the third one is the destruction of the taints. That is the three taints, that is the taints of these sensual desires, craving to be exist, craving to be, and the third one is the delusion. So when someone completely destruct, when the destruction of the taints, then that means someone is already attained enlightenment, that is a nirvana. So no longer, no more rebirth, no more coming back, no more coming back, because you're no longer making new karma. It's just like, and yesterday also I did mention, so when you're doing something good, yeah, you still come back, you rebound in a good place, you know. And but that, when that ends, also you don't know, the next life, if you're naughty, you know, then you go back to the not a very good place, and then again ups and down, up and down again, you know, in the cycle of rebirth go on and on. So until when we stop the fuel, that is the craving is like when we keep feeding our craving, if we keep, you know, feeding our desires, that is a second noble truth, that the cause of the suffering, when we keep feeding it. So then we keep the fire burning, the fire keep burning, it will never end, isn't it? Never cease. So only when we stop, you know, stop feeding our craving, you know, stop putting in fuel, when it's no more fuel, the fire stop. This is how, then no more rebirth is stopped. The fire just go out. No more fire. No more burning. There is all cessation. So when I knew I saw this, my mind was liberated from the taint of sensual desires, from the taint of being, from the taint of ignorance. When it was liberated, there came the knowledge. It is liberated. I directly knew. Birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived and had to be done, has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. There is nirvana, no more, no rebirth, no coming back. This was the first, this was the third truth, true knowledge attained by me in the last watch of the night. Ignorance was banished and true knowledge arose. Darkness was banished and light arose. As happens in one who abides diligent, ardent, and resolute. Now, Brahmin, it might be that you think, perhaps the recluse Gautama is not free from lust, hate, and delusion, even today, which is why he still resorts to remove jungle thicker resting places in the forest. But you should not think thus. This is because I see two benefits that I still resort to the remote jungle thickers resting places in the forest. I see a pleasant abiding for myself here and now. I have compassion for future generations. Indeed, it is because Master Gautama is an accomplished one, fully enlightened one, that he has compassion for future generation, magnificent Master Gautama, magnificent Master Gautama. And Master Gautama has made the Dharma clear in many ways, as though we were turning upright what had been overthrown, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those who with eyesight to see forms. I go to the Master Gautama for refuge, and to the Dharma and to the Sangha of bhikkhus. From today, let Master Gautama remember me as a lay follower who has gone to him for refuge for life. So after listening to this, and we become the disciples of the Buddha. Any questions or comments? Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. When you were talking about remaining in the same posture while you had angst and fear,
yeah.
Do you think also it is about the feeling, not the physical movement?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of when, so that because we like to run away from things, we don't want to face the feeling because it's unpleasant. This is what we're doing all the time. Something that we don't like, we try to pretend that it's not there, we suppress it, you know, we suppress or we're running away, we don't face it. But when we remove that, when we remain, you know, in the posture, actually being forced to really not to run away, really look at, really feel how it's really face this unpleasant feeling.
Stay with the feeling, right?
Yeah, stay with the feelings. But actually, when you have the experience and then you say, it actually it's okay, unpleasant feeling is going to pass, it's not going to stay. It's really good experience. And after that, I'm getting more and more, I mean, better with that. If the fear comes very quick, I just subside very quick. Because, you know, you're getting good at it. After a while, and I find that it's really good experience. I remember these sutras long ago, even when I was a layperson, I read this, and surprisingly, I remember that moment. That's why it's really good that once you read sutras, it's good that when you're peaceful, when you're calm, actually you really go in, you know. But if you try to read sutras like, you know, like knowledge, you know, like very academic, you know, try to look for this translation, that translation, even you know Pali also, you actually have to really experience yourself. It's only words, isn't it? You know, even you know Pali, you know, and also you can only imagine, isn't it? Unless you have the experience yourself, you have first hand experience, you have the direct experience, then you know, this is what it really means, you know. Actually, no point in really into, you know, arguing whether what actually the Buddha said. If we really want to know what the Buddha said, go and experience yourself. And practice, put into practice and have your first hand experience and your direct experience to experience that, you know. Because all these words is still a concept. You know, like, you know, if you never experience like that food, you know, if I keep telling you how it tastes like, you can only imagine, isn't it? Until when we taste it, I know how it tastes like. You know, the same thing, you know, the Buddhist teaching, actually we have to put into practice and we have to experience ourselves. So because wisdom cannot be taught, it's not a knowledge, it cannot be taught. It has to come from our own experience. How we understand. That's like when we read sutras, you know, that actually it's good when we read with a peaceful mind, when we are calm, peaceful, then actually you remember. Because part of mindfulness also you remember, your memory is better, you know, you can remember. So then whenever you need it, actually it's just natural, I also don't know. It just pops up in my mind that, oh, I read this. Actually, you know, when you read these sutras and you put it aside, after a while you don't even remember what you have read, isn't it? But because I think that because the moment I read it, because of with really full attention, with the clarity, with peaceful, when your mind is peaceful and your mind is calm, you know, it's more receptive. You really be able to remember. So then at that moment, I'd be able to pull out, you know, this pops up and remember. And I find it really useful. That's right. Yes. Yeah, it's okay.
So can the same then, do you think, be said for all feelings? So all difficult feelings? The same approach.
Yeah. Also, even anxieties and things like that. So, anger, that is also subside because most people don't like to experience the unpleasant feelings because it's very unpleasant. So most people becomes very unskillful. They use all sorts of unskillful ways to run away. Maybe some people got into drugs, alcohol. So and when they get into all these the drugs and alcohol, so that they don't want to experience that, that they're running away. Yeah, it's still the same. Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah, you know, in I think it's practice. practice most in Thailand too. The every quarter nights they have, we call it like a Buddha day. So the day they were like Uposatha day, there's a practice. So yeah. like they like a quarter moon, half moon, you know, and then full moon, and then, you know, then come and do. They have it every quarter moon. They call it quarter. I think that is kind of that time. I think this is much more. They come from the, you know, like some, like, for example, like Katina and Frida Doreen, like that times, most of those, you know, the ascetics, they practice, you know, like they have a full moon day, you know, they get together, you know, and the practice, you know, yeah. How to release people from their fear without confront them with their fear? How to release people from fear, from their fear, without confront them with the fear? I think this is what I have been saying, that we have to confront. That's why when we stay, that means we are not running away, we confront with the fear. That's like, I think this is the same, this is what I've been saying just now, almost the same questions. Yeah. They said this is not, because we've been conditioned that way. Whenever things that unpleasant, we've been good at it, you know, without even knowing that we are doing it, you know. Unpleasant feelings, you know, anything unpleasant, we just like automatic pilot, you know, sometimes people go into like all sorts of like unskillful, you know, action. Like for example, some people don't like to, when they feel depressed or they're not happy, some people got into their like shopping, you know. It's a way to run away. I've seen people, one of our supporters in Singapore, that her niece, you know, he likes shopping. He bought lots of things, but never, all the clothes, whole lot, never wore. Because he don't have to face it, because it's unpleasant, because we keep running away from unpleasant feelings. When it's a pleasant feeling, then we don't go away, stay, you know. Then when the pleasant feelings gone, we so upset, isn't it? We so angry, you know. That, you know, cannot get what we want, and we hold on to it, because whether actually end of the day, you know, whether it's pleasant and unpleasant, it's not going to stay, isn't it? Even pleasant feelings, you know, like all the good experience, all the pleasant, wonderful feelings that we have in the past, where is it now? Gone, isn't it? It's not going to stay. So at the end of the day, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, the same, isn't it? Anyway, it's not going to stay. So, but why people, usually this is how we want the unpleasant feelings to go away faster. And then we want the pleasant feelings not to go away, stay longer. But it's impossible, you know. This is how we create so much suffering for ourselves, because we don't see things, we don't perceive things purely. We just go according to our like this. And decide we only like this, we don't like this, and we try to push away. So, and then actually we really mess things up, we create more suffering for ourselves. So, anything? Any more questions or comments? No questions? Yeah. Sometimes, like, you know, you see what you want to see. Sometimes we create that, because you know why? When we start thinking about it, and this is how the mind keeps feeding. We keep reinforcing until we feel it becomes, the feeling becomes stronger and stronger. It's just like you keep feeding it, you know, like the fire started when it just trickled off, and there's a spark, and the fire trickled, and it trickled off, and it started to burn. And then we add more fuel, and it burn bigger, and add more. Then this is how the feelings become stronger and stronger, because we keep feeding it, we keep putting in more fuel. And then we have people, you know, that really, you know, actually it's our mind we create that, because we reinforce that. We keep reinforce that. They say sometimes when you believe that, you see it. You know, that this is how we've been conditioned. This is how when someone been brainwashed, you know, like those, you know, that like Second World War, when the Japanese, you know, they train the army from the young. They keep telling them, you want this test, it's very nice from China. Go and get it, you know. Then you keep telling them, you know. Then this is, and then they see what they want to see and keep reinforcing. The same thing when you come to the Ajahn Mun and you come here and we give talk, we also brainwash you. The same thing, brainwash, but brainwash in a good way, like in a wholesome way, like, you know, so that you live a skillful life, you know. Yes? Yeah.
Dread.
Yeah.
That's what to expect.
Yeah, because of the delusion, this is what we expect. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Yeah, what you say. So, any more questions or comments? Okay. So, maybe we can end this session. Thank you. Sutipanno bhagavato sāvakasaṅgho saṅkha